What's up, bad boys? Thanks for clicking on this podcast today. This month, we got a very special treat for you. It's Mecha March, and we're going to be running down a different mech anime every week this month. That's four animes, and that's four chances to talk about big, bulbous, cool, giant robots. Isn't that fun? So sit back, relax, get in that goddamn robot, Shinji, and have a nice Mecha March.
It's bad. Anime.
What's up, bad boys? My name's John.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Bad Anime, the show where we decide, is this anime bad? All right, well, we've been excited to talk about this one for a little while, eh?
It's one of the things where, like, I've desperately wanted to talk about for a long time, but never had the proper forum, but now we're in Mecha March, and I'm like, we started with Gundam, so I might as well talk about words. Clearly, I'm excited.
Yes.
I figured we should talk about what is currently my favorite Gundam. That can change, obviously, because I'm still exploring the franchise hard. But this is legitimately the first one I finished. Its brevity definitely helped in that regard. This is Gundam 8th MS Team, an OVA from 96. And
okay, 96.
And here's the thing, Bouncy. We talked about this before, how but it was a little obtuse in the beginning. But now that you've seen some of the original Gundam, you kind of know what I'm talking about. When we talk about the UC timeline.
Yes, okay.
So,
yes. And this occurs in the UC timeline.
Exactly. So occurs sometime after they work out all the bugs in the first mobile suit Gundam. Mm-hmm. And so then they start dispatching them. They don't go crazy at the mass production. There's only still a few of them. In the original Gundam, they actually have other shittier units.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only a few actual Gundams in the Earth Federation's army.
Right.
So this takes place just in the middle of the great one-year war between the Earth Federation and Zeon. Okay. On Earth, presumably Nam.
See, that is fun.
Yes.
I really thought about that throughout this entire show, and I was like, oh, this is just like a Vietnam War reenactment, kind of.
But with robots.
And I loved it. But I will say, something I had to ask, too, because you made a mention of this before about this series being in the UC timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same time period about, like,
yes.
Like about a year after, you're saying?
Probably with a few months after.
Of the first Gundam.
Yes.
So what happened otherwise, like, between this and that? Because, mm-hmm. like, what are the other series that occurred between Gundam 1 and then this one? And have they kind of been telling them in succession up to this point? Or have they all just kind of been a little bit of everywhere?
It's kind of a little bit of everywhere. There's a couple of great ones. There's actually one OVA is titled, Gundam 0080, War in the Pocket.
War in the Pocket.
That just follows a kid encountering a Zeon soldier who crash lands on Earth and then just some really I haven't watched it yet, but it's like the most, people call it the most emotionally charged Gundam because there's barely any robot fighting. You just see some tragedies of war.
Damn.
So basically, it's basically splatterings wherever, but they always make sure to put it somewhere coherent in the timeline.
Okay. And this falls right in that timeline. I actually pulled up, there's a really, really handy chart on the Gundam Wikipedia that gives you the order of every single Gundam series.
Oh, does it really?
And also what timeline it's in.
Oh, cool.
And what year it's in.
Very nice.
Which is fascinating. So, of course, you said the Mobile Suit Gundam. The first one was in UC-79.
Yes.
8th MS Team is also in UC-79.
Yeah, so it's like a few months of what we saw in the original Gundam.
That's pretty crazy.
Basically, them basically getting the kinks out of the mobile suits and being like, okay, start sending them places.
Because they really jump around here, because Zeta Gundam was 87.
Yes.
Gundam ZZ was 88. The one after that, it was Char's Counterattack as a movie in 93. So they really, really jump around here.
Yes.
It seemed like they kind of came back to the beginning, though.
Exactly. So what happened essentially is that Gundam started losing a lot of favor because they kept to the UC for a very long time. I'm pretty sure the latest UC got officially was somewhere like 150, somewhere around there.
Okay, wow.
But then what they did was they're like, okay, we just need to do different timelines now because this story is so long that we can't get any newcomers.
They needed a reboot, a refresh.
Which is exactly why they did G Gundam. So they put one in a separate timeline, its own continuity, and they wanted to make it as kind of silly as possible. So literally the antithesis of the original Gundam.
That's funny. Okay, so that's what I think when I think of Gundam.
Exactly, because that's the image we've been painted. in the West. Yes, that's one thing.
Especially
I
in the West. Like,
that's why I harp on that. G Gundam was the second Gundam series to be broadcast in the West. The first was Wing, which is more a little more traditional, but the second one was G Gundam, which was way more goofy and childish.
Okay.
Intentionally
that makes a lot of sense.
Hence why our image of the West has been painted. We got the Chibi Gundam series at the same time.
Oh.
So basically Gundam SD is what it's called. Stands for Super Deformed Gundam. So it's your little cute Gundams running around doing things. So they brought that over as well, not too long after G Gundam.
Fascinating.
So that's why the image of Gundam has gotten so associated with childlike entertainment in the West.
And since we're talking about G Gundam and Gundam Wing, it seems also like that 8th MS team came directly after both of those. G Gundam happened 94-95. Gundam Wing happened 95-96. And then 8th MS team happened 96.
Yes. And so basically,
crazy.
Well, the thing is, this is an OVA series. So while Wing was still on air, what they wanted to do essentially was they wanted to give up doing main TV series in the UC to attract more fans. But at the same time, they want to do OVAs still set in the UC, the Universal Century timeline, for the current fans that they had. So they wanted their cake and to eat it too.
Interesting. Okay. And that's what produced this anime, which we're talking about
today. Exactly. I'm not sure if this is the first one to have done this. Was it Stardust Memory was another one? UC, it takes a little afterwards, but I don't know which one was produced first.
Mm-hmm.
War in the Pocket, I think, was before either of them. But so there's a ton of Gundam OVAs set in the Universal Century timeline. Those are more so for the longtime fans, hence why those OVAs have the reputation for being more adult in terms of presentation.
Okay. Okay. And this was definitely, I thought, at least, seeing it a little more adult.
Yes. It's funny because I don't know if it was necessarily as adult as the original Gundam, but there was more blood and tits. So
there were. Indeed, there were. Yeah, maybe it was more of like a teenage.
Yeah, this one was a little more like a teenage kind of a demographic. That's a great point. And because also we have a very young cast here in terms of ages and people who are charging towards their death in this fucking war.
Yeah, which is pretty funny. That the most interesting part about this, I thought, was that Shiro, the main captain guy,
Shiro Yamada,
Quite young. He's picked as a commander, and he's like 20 years old. Dude.
Exactly.
Yes. Nuts. Yeah. So, I mean, the story starts, which I thought was a really fun beginning, before we even got to like the quote Vietnam territory.
They're in the shuttle.
A shuttle, and he goes out in space, and he gets lost in space and meets this Zeon woman.
Aina Sahalin.
Yes. Oh, my God. And they of course, like survive together, and they both get shuttled out by their perspective
respective forces. And
yeah,
but clearly they're like, oh fuck, feels.
Yeah, like I love this. And I'm very interested in that because I was like, oh, this is a good like war torn lovers story,
Star-crossed lovers story. It's cheesy as all hell, but like it's one of the most appealing human narratives ever written.
Yes.
Hence why it's been going on since like the 1400s.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it definitely hits. And I'm like, oh, that was a fun place to start because you kind of take that reality and you just completely change it by the middle of the first episode into the second.
Well, it's so cool because they started on a very human level and take a very human issue and bring that into the war. So because sometimes a lot of war-based shows, you feel like you're reading a battle plan instead of talking about emotions. That's kind of what the problem we both kind of had. It's like, retroactively speaking, kind of like with Legend of the Galactic Heroes that we watched for a couple of episodes.
Yeah, yes, we did.
It felt like more like you're reading someone's military synopsis more than a human emotional story.
Right. There's nothing to hook me necessarily.
I still hear that is actually really, really good, but the first couple episodes were not. So,
okay, maybe that deserves a look back from us then.
It's gonna take a while because like that thing's like 100 fucking episodes. I may do it in my free time, but then again, I could just watch more Gundam.
Very much,
and I think I know which way I'm leaning. So, they meet, they get shuttled out, and they're to their respective by their respective forces. Shiro meets. We see kind of clips beforehand of the squad that Shiro's about to be joining.
Mm-hmm.
We see, I believe her name's Karen, the redhead one.
Yes, Karen.
Yeah.
Karen, great name for a. Everybody else has very Japanese names.
and then we just have Karen.
However,
Karen is like probably how it's originally pronounced. It's actually kind of a common, weird Japanese pseudo-English name.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Or I see it a lot in anime. I don't know if that's in the real world, but I see it a lot in anime.
Well.
So yeah, but she's muscle mommy. I remember she throws a wrench very early on at Elidor, who was our long-haired heavy metal songwriter. So I immediately empathize with the guy.
Yeah, of course you do.
Especially when he broke down. He's like, why am I here? And I'm like, good question. Why are you here?
I saw that guy and I was like, of course we love him.
Like, of course Rob loves this show.
We love him.
Yeah,
he's an audio engineer, a music producer, and he like writes songs. Like, yeah, of course. And he's just like a war. He's in the war.
Got, like,
he also loves
heavy
metal.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. He's great. Yeah, Put him in.
He's a great contrast to, I always forget Little Douche's name.
I forget his name too, and I'm looking it up right now. I just call him BB guy.
Yeah.
BB.
Because he keeps writing all those notes to BB, his girlfriend that we don't hear from, like a letter from until later.
Mikkel.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Was it Mikael or Mikkel? I can forget.
Mikkel.
Yeah, it was Mikkel. So, we don't hear from BB a letter back until a little later in this, like a halfway through the series, roughly.
Yeah.
So we get them, and we get the guy who is like the Reaper, who like,
Sanders.
Was it?
Sanders.
Oh, Sanders. Yeah. He was a very cool addition. He was the most grounded of the bunch.
Yes. Yes.
And his story arc, which happens, I believe, episode 4, was very nice, where it was basically he's like, oh, yeah, every team I'm with dies. And Shiro's like, well, that sucks, but like, we're not going to die. That's not happening.
We ain't dying. And, you know, I got to say, like, they came in so strong with all these characters in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I even texted you about this. I was so sure that they were all going to die.
Yes.
I was like, you know, this is great. We got all these awesome characters. They're really popping off the page. They're popping off the screen. I'm loving this. Okay. I'm excited to see them live. So they're going to die.
I remember you texting me that, like, wait, why aren't any of them dead yet?
I was actually surprised. I mean, given to the end of the show, but like, no spoilers here. It's been out for like 30 years.
Exactly.
To 40 years. But I mean, none of them die really.
No.
So, I mean, I was surprised. I was like, oh, well, what do you know? I really thought they were going to get taken away from me.
Yeah, no, but they all stuck around, even Kiki, who was the forest ruffian, like rebel ruffian they found and recruited. And the first thing we see of her is her boobs. And I think the character's actually not, it's 7. They make it clear she's like not 18. It's like, oh, thanks, Japan.
Yeah. Well, which of course.
Yeah.
Of course
I mean, at this point, just duh. And Shiro just like openly ogles her. And at first she's really not into it. But as the show goes on, she's like really into the idea.
It was so funny that he like ogles her and it's the first meeting. And then she's naked and he sees her naked. And then she's like, hey, don't you like me though? And he's like, no, you're too young. And I'm like, wait a minute, Shiro.
And a couple lines earlier, he said, well, you're nice to look at. And I'm like, oh, God.
Shiro.
That's even worse. How is
my
that
dog
worse? You raw dog, Shiro Yamada.
Damn, bro.
And meanwhile, he's crushing on a Zion chick.
He is, yes.
And then
we
see very early on her very weird relationship with her brother.
Yeah, it really took one of those weird turns that like the enemy kind of faction always takes, where it's like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like that brother sister duo are kind of close. I think they might make out a little bit.
Entire time, it felt like she was about to drop on her knees and start pleading him. It was
really did.
The way she called him brother mine and was like touching him. I'm like, oh my God, what did he do to you?
I'm like, this is strange. It really made me like, you know that Instagram account that's called Siblings or Dating?
Yes. I don't know that one.
It's just pictures of couples, and the caption's always, are they siblings or are they dating?
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's
and
just
it's
so funny.
Always a mind fuck.
Oh my God. It's like,
that's the exact picture I got here. Like, he has, speaking of picture, Shiro has the picture of her and her brother on the watch that she gives him in the very beginning of the show. And she's like, ah, she's probably got that boyfriend at home. I'm like, wow, they're implying a hell of a lot
here. Like, then we meet a weird members of like, they're like kind of like not really royal family, but people around them. There's that one general who the entire, like not general, but he's like a high up commander who has a blue Zaku.
Right.
And he's like talking, basically saying, I just want to bone Ina so badly.
I know. And everybody's like, calm down, man.
It's like, and then we get the other character. I forget his name, but he's very prevalently voiced by the actor who played Gordy and Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide and Timmy's dad in Fairly Odd Parents and Cosmo. Like, I heard that voice. I'm like, oh, that's just him.
That's so funny because I also totally picked up on that.
He also played the president in Team America. So like,
exactly. And this is where I'd put a trophy.
If I had one. So once I heard that voice, I'm like, okay, I'm immediately invested in the villains now.
Yeah, the villains were pretty fun. All their scenes were very interesting because it was kind of the same, a very similar
eerie
situation. Yes, it was a very similar situation as we got in the first Gundam, where you had the Fetties, you had the Zeons, and neither of them are perfect. You got a lot of bad Fetties up top, you got a lot of bad Zeons up top, and they all suck.
They all suck. However, I will say this one made the main Zeon guy, Ina's brother, they went out of their way to classify him as like pure evil.
Oh, insane.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane.
So they did a good job there. So I guess it wasn't as emotionally complex as like maybe the main Gundam series where it was like, okay, both these guys have points. Now, and this one's like, okay, we're pretty sure Zeon are the bad guys here.
Yeah.
At least guy.
That one guy very much so is the bad guy.
But kind of it might have been a little necessary to just give us that big villain to root against, you know?
It could have been. And because, I mean, but the thing is, you didn't really, at least, like, I didn't really know that he was a complete villain until, like, midway through.
Exactly.
Because he's working on this device, which is basically a big ship. I forget the name of it.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's kind of dumb, the name.
Yeah, it's a very dumb name.
Obsolus?
Obsolus. How did you do that?
Yeah. I love this thing. Spoilers are my feelings.
Yeah, he works on the Obsolus, which just looks like a big-ass jellyfish.
Really, it's Zaku combined with a spaceship, and it looks a little silly, but then you see the impact it can have. You're like, oh, he built a Zaku Death Star.
Yeah, it just shoots lasers that destroys everything.
Yes.
So pretty cool.
Yes, and so that's kind of like the thing going on here. Oh my God, I can't see you anymore.
Oh, no. Well, it's okay. I'll get it back up. You can just keep on going.
I'll keep on going for the moment. Cool. So a couple of the early episodes are a little more character-driven and kind of day-to-day plots of what military personnel would be doing like in this environment. And those scenes were super necessary, but I didn't really realize it until after the fact because we got a lot of insight to the characters, and it was great world-building. Remember we always talk about Japanese story structure and how sometimes it can be like very drawn out if not done well?
Yes.
This was done well. This was just like, hey, like let's actually just let these characters breathe and do things for a little bit to set things up, and then we'll bring the big dumb giant fucking robot.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it was actually paced quite well, especially because it was the the 12 episodes, I think, made it very, very fun, at least for like what I was watching, because I watched it on Hulu, and they offered in 12 episodes, and that, I think it was so digestible. I think every episode was great, and also because it was previously an OVA, I also found it interesting, and I know that I found that out afterwards, but I noticed that during it, I was like, oh, every episode starts out and it feels like a completely different day, like a completely different week. Like it's been like a month since the last episode, probably.
Which is kind of cool. And that's like one of the, oh my God, the screen's doing weird stuff now.
Oh no, I got it. Don't worry.
Sweet. No, I'm not worried. I'm just delighted by all the logos I see. That's one of the cool things. So yes, it is a 12 episode OVA and all 12 parts were released as an OVA.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're grouped together. I read some reports that it was like two or three episodes sold together at the same time.
Yeah, it seems like from this kind of schedule, it looks like that these episodes were released between 1996 and 1999. So actually quite dispersed.
Yeah, so if you look at the release dates, you can see how many of them are probably put together on the same VHS tape or Laserdisc, depending on the format. But since then it was 90s Japan, it was probably one of the two, if not both. Those are the popular home video preferences at the time. Anyway, so this is also a very cool dynamic here. So you have to be a big Gundam fan in order to go out and buy this or rent it, which is also very prevalent possibility at the time because the rental market was huge for OVAs. Some OVAs actually didn't even have a huge production numbers made. They were sold exclusively to rental stores.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ones that suck usually had that.
Hana
no Asuka Gumi.
Classic. Yes. We've seen that one.
Is it a classic?
No.
Yeah.
Well, it's a classic in that it's old, but...
But that doesn't make it good.
Not a good classic.
Shit. Anyway, so the first couple episodes, it was cool to see like these missions. Like, you know, I think... I forgot exactly what was the focus of Reaper's episode, but they had a mission. They're like, we're all going to die. It's our third mission.
Yeah,
and they all just didn't die. And he's like, sweet.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And each kind of, they did the thing where each episode kind of spotlights a specific character.
Or duos, yeah.
Yeah, or duos. They got to do that whole thing, which is pretty great. And I thought the missions were really fun. It was kind of a nice like strategy dive each week or yes. each episode.
Yeah, and you got a little insight into what the fuck they were doing there with like them trying to like gather data on the Opsalis when they were in the desert, which I right. love the desert episode.
Yeah, that was so cool.
Because they all started like kind of losing their minds.
Yeah, which is pretty funny.
Because they're just stuck in the desert.
And then Mikkel starts to punch Shiro because he's like, I can't write letters to Bibi. And they're all like, shut up.
Oh, and but that scene was great because Kiki just kind of joins the team and gets her like mm-hmm. village involved with the Earth Federation. They're purely like neutral, just trying to protect their homes. But Kiki kind of sees how shitty Zeon can be and also really wants to bag Shiro. So she just joins the team. And I think Mikkel was like teasing her about like, you're never going to get with Shiro. He has eyes on for someone else.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, let's see how cool you are. So she's like running around like, stop it. Give me back my letters. And then she starts reading the letters from Mikkel and she reads BB's breakup letter. And then she stops running. And then at this point, it's nighttime in the desert. So she's running as the moon's behind her. And then you see Mikkel on the ground broken because he had to hear those words out loud. And he's just like on the verge of sobbing. It's like, oh,
yeah,
fuck. Just like that, what?
Things got pretty real sometimes in this show. And that was one of those instances where Kiki, obviously, like reading the letter, she was like, oops.
Yeah, that's what I remember. Kiki was immediately like, ooh, I think I might have done Mikkel dirty here. Oh, God.
Yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, Ina's like just talking to her brother and he's like just about ready to fuck this Opsalis that he's building.
Yes. Oh, for sure. And oh my God, the brother was ridiculous at one point. He just killed all the doctors that worked on the Opsalis.
Yes.
Or all the scientists that developed it because he was like, now only I can use it.
It was fucking insane. And he killed, what's his face? The character that was voiced by Gordy. And I was like, no.
No.
Fuck this guy.
Yeah, he blew him up in a tunnel.
Yeah, he just blew him up. He's like, well, bye. It's like,
he just bombed him in a tunnel.
Just absolutely destroyed him. It's like, what the absolute fuck is
crazy.
Happening?
Yeah, so he kind of went on a villainous rampage at that point. And meanwhile, another episode that I did want to spotlight, which we did refer to just you and me over text.
Okay.
Is when Elidor got his song on the radio.
Yes.
And Elidor was like, yo, Mikkel, I just got my song on the radio.
Yes.
I'm going to go to the town over there and get fucking blasted. You want to come, bro? And Mikkel's like, not really, but okay. And they go together.
Yes.
And they get caught by Zeons.
And then the Zeon forces capture them. And then it's like a fun prison break episode. I'm just like, this was really needed for like a little bit of levity here. It's like,
yes,
well,
a little bit of light. They really knew when to add some lightheartedness into kind of everything here.
Well, that's the thing, because this thing, I guess because looking back, one of the reasons why I really enjoyed it because I love the serious tone. But looking back now, after seeing so much dark stuff, this was so lighthearted and fun in spots, which
I
really loved.
It was. And they kind of had that also whole episode where Shiro and Ino were once again trapped in a weird location.
And then, like, the entire time they're about to bone, but then apparently at one point Shiro has like a PTSD flashback about his family getting killed by Zeon, and he's like, I hate you guys. And Ina's like, well, that wasn't me. And also, like, the Earth Federation kind of sucks at points, dude. And he's like, nah, you, like, killed everyone I loved. And she's like, well, what do we do now? And he's like, bone?
Yeah. And she's like, what do we do now? And she looks at him and he's like, I made hot tub.
I'm in hot tub. Let's relax our bones. It's fucking ridiculous. But in a very charming way.
Yes, very funny. And he just makes hot tub in the middle of a mountain.
Yes. Oh my God. But as the series go on, we do get some really, really nice Gundam fights, and these were fairly well animated, the ones we did get, because it felt so weighty and important because they're in a jungle. As you saw in the original Gundam, it was like a lot of space stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This was just like in a jungle, and people were like dying as it happened.
And I thought it was fascinating because it was all like ground units.
Yes.
No space units, kind of no flying, really.
Nope.
And it was all just kind of guerrilla warfare style, which I thought was like a great, great shout out to like the Vietnam War.
Yes.
Because I, as a kind of a history buff, I was so into that kind of whole scenario.
Oh, right.
is it was all about, it wasn't even about like destroying the enemy. It was most of the missions were about finding them.
Yes, finding them and the element of surprise.
Yes, which is really, really cool.
Element of surprise.
Surprise. And there was a lot of interesting strategy in that whole thing.
Which is so funny because the fact that they made a believable guerrilla warfare story about giant robots.
You can't really hide those things well.
But they made it credible.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, the whole Fetty side is, like, the robots are white. The Zakus are green. They can get away with that shit.
It's like, we're in trouble here, guys.
Yeah, like, we got some problems.
Like, they dulled some of the colors on them, so it was, like, it was like a little more gray than the average. Because the original Gundam was very brightly colored. This one was a little more subdued. But still the classic Gundam colors.
Definitely. And of course, like, I also really enjoy the idea of the kind of the infighting between both sides. Like the Zeon we mentioned, the brother of Aina just blowing up the other generals.
Everybody, yeah.
And kind of, and also on the Fetty side, after they realize that Shiro and Aina are kind of like cozying up together, they actually tell a lot of Shiro's team members, notably Sanders and Karen, that if Shiro refuses to kill the enemy at any point, you need to snipe him.
I forgot about that whole dynamic.
That was really fun.
Karen was like very close to doing it. She's like,
yes.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
There was a whole trial for Shiro. Yeah. They're like, dude, you're boning the enemy. How the fuck are we supposed to trust you? And he's like, you can't. Whatever. And they're like, well, we need you, so get back in there, champ.
You have to go. but please help.
But please help destroy the Opsalis.
And then the Opsalis just messes everything up.
Oh my god.
That thing just like lasers the crap out of everything.
Yeah, it destroys entire environments. It literally, if a Zaku Death Star is a surprisingly good comparison.
It is. It really is. But yeah, I mean, they eventually, of course, like Shiro works with Aina to defeat the brother and kind of take down the Opsalis.
Right.
And, you know, after that, and this is kind of the part I was really excited to talk about.
Okay.
After that, they kind of blow up in a mountain.
Yes.
And we were like, oh, what happened to them? I don't know. And then episode 12 happens.
Okay, and not everything in this world is perfect.
Which is the most, at least as I saw from my brief search online, a very polarizing episode of the series.
Who liked
it? With some people going as far to say that you don't even need it there and you can just watch through episode 11. Don't even waste your time.
Well, yeah, well, that's the thing. We were talking about this earlier. A Toonami didn't even air episode 12 because there was a scene, a bunch of skinny dipping children, and they're like, you know what? It'd be better if we just didn't air this episode.
We don't need it narratively, really. So
there's no point. The only thing it does, because it's Mikkel and Kiki boating around trying to find Shiro and Aina. They think, all right, maybe they survived. And it's a decent amount of time has passed.
A lot of time has passed because everybody else, like Sanders, Karen, Elidor, has kind of been like reassigned.
Like,
exactly. So it's just kind of them left. And Mikkel was given the option to reassign, but he decided to leave the force entirely.
Exactly.
In order to try to find Commander Shiro.
Exactly. And Kiki is just there because Kiki.
Yeah, she just lives there. So.
Yeah. She's like, all right, I'll help you, Mikkel. Fine.
Yeah, so, and also she loves Shiro, obviously.
Yeah, so they find this group of kids, and they're, like, orphaned by war, and then it's, you know, cutesy bullshit, and then you learn that these kids were, at one point were under the care of Aina and Shiro, and they all have names now, because like, they were like, oh, we never had names before, and they reveal their new names, and they're all named after, like, the crew of Shiro's crew. So, like, the Commander and Aina are alive. And then eventually they find Aina and Shiro in like a hut somewhere. Shiro's like fucked up on a cane and Aina's pregnant and just cuts to Shiro smiling. And then Mikkel screaming, Commander, while the intro song plays on out. And then we end the series. And I'm like, you know. Anyway, just know.
That
episode, did it hurt the series overall? In my mind, no.
Okay.
But it was admittedly super dumb.
It was definitely super dumb.
Yeah.
It definitely wasn't needed. You could have ended on episode 11.
Yes.
And that could have been it, and it could have been fine. I mean, I would have been asking questions about, like, well, what happened to Shiro and Ina? Like, I got to know about that. So in a selfish kind of way, I'm happy that I got that closure.
Yes.
But you didn't exactly need 21 minutes of lead up to do it.
Exactly. Where it's like, it's a little much.
That was a lot. Like, with the kids and everything, I was kind of, like, confused about what they were trying to do.
Right.
I kind of got it in that, like, okay, you know, it's still, like, war-torn.
Yeah.
And Zeon kids, and they never really had a chance to have a real life. And I get
right.
it.
I mean, I get it.
It kind of had the makings of a different series.
A little bit. Like, it didn't really feel in place at all.
I was like, it could have just been another Gundam series.
It could have been just a sequel at that point, you know?
They would have done, like, another OVA tacked onto everything.
Right.
But it kind of manifested itself in the last 20 minutes, or, like, a full episode in this case.
Right.
And, yeah, it's just kind of weird. But I was happy at the end that they found Shiro, they found Ina,
right.
living at a house. Very, very anime as well. Like, it reminded me of Attack on Titan, the ending recently, actually.
Okay, cool.
Where they find Shiro and Ina just in a cabin.
Yeah, just like there, like, hi.
And it's like, oh, they're living their lives in, like, incomplete peace, like, kind of how they wanted to this whole time.
Yeah, so.
And, like, that was nice, I guess. Shiro had no dialogue.
Yeah. Which is hysterical.
And then that was it. So, I didn't really think it needed to be in there, and I honestly think it may have hurt the show as a complete package.
Okay,
just a little bit.
That's fair. I can definitely see that.
Not a lot. Like, I'm not saying don't watch this because of that episode. I'm saying watch all of this. The last episode, kind of weird.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of weird. I'd say watch it for completionist sake at that point.
Yes, because, like, I'd say that too.
Yeah. So I guess we could kind of get into this because you just said watch it. Is that your take? Is this thing bad?
Yeah, I think that is my take, to watch it, because it's really good.
Yes, exactly.
It's not at all bad. I really enjoyed it. I think it's probably... I was really happy that they were able to tell this story so well and so concisely within a 12-episode margin.
Yes, yes, that's great.
That was my favorite thing about this. I was like, as I was getting episode to episode,
yes.
I noticed that I was excited for the next one every single time.
Oh, see, that's a great
point. And I was excited to keep it up. Because the narrative was truly good.
Right. Because
you had, like, the star-crossed lovers thing happening, and that's kind of like in some episodes, an overarching theme. In some episodes, it's quite kind of swept under the rug, which I quite liked.
Which is cool, because it's there, but it's not the main focus always.
Yeah, you had all these things.
Yes.
You had all these threads, and I like a bunch of threads going at the same time in plot line. And it was fun. Yeah, I just had a good time watching it. I don't think there was any point besides the last episode where I was like, this is unnecessary, we don't need this, and I would rather not watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, great. I kind of no notes, except for the last episode.
Yeah, the last episode's a punching bag, obviously. But besides that, I really have nothing more to say. I haven't seen this thing in probably 4 years, but I gave you all the character names and plot points I could. So,
yeah.
Clearly, this thing stuck with me. It was...
it did.
It was a very fun day. I was in a place 2 homes ago, just sitting down and watching it. I was off from work, and I remember it very well. Watched the whole thing in a day, and I'm like... this is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I did this. And I'm still really glad I watched it. I watched even the compilation film they did, The Miller Report, and which had some original footage in there. And it weirdly explained Eleanor's returning to the crew after his injury.
Oh, yeah, because he kind of just dips for a little bit there.
He gets injured, but then he shows back up in the next episode. No introduction. He's like, oh, yeah, I didn't get laid. It's like, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
She's like, thanks, dude. That was the thing on everyone's mind. Okay, we're dying in war, but if my boy Elador is getting his dick waggled, then everything will be fine.
Waggled?
I didn't know what to say.
I thought, like, okay, also, maybe something else I'll just throw out there. This is another one of those takes that I could be wrong.
Okay.
But this is a very similar take to what I had in Ava.
Okay.
Where I was like, why didn't somebody die to up the stakes?
Yeah, no, that's a good
point. That could have been good. That could have been good. Somebody could have died.
It definitely could have been good. I feel like in Ava, it would be a lot more impactful and appropriate. This one, it still could have worked very, very well.
Right. Like, you know, Mikkel could have been the Toji. He could have took one for the team. He could have died. Honestly,
Elador could have died.
I was thinking Elador because he got injured so badly. I was like, yes, good. Well, not good, but I was like, yes, like if he dies in this, like, episode, in this scene, like, it'll be for a cause, like, you know, he'll be like lovers with Karen in the afterlife, right?
Sure.
And And we'll up the stakes, and everybody will be sad next episode.
Honestly, to your point, I kind of agree with it. How cool would it have been if, like, they heard Elidor's song on the radio after he died?
Yeah. Oh, I just got chills, actually.
That would have been great. That would have been great.
That would be like, ooh, that would be devious. I would love that.
That would have been spicy.
So, great plot point.
Not perfect, obviously, this thing. But for what it is, it's a very fun time. A very fun mecha time. But serious enough where it doesn't feel stupid.
Yes, it was never at any point did I think, oh, this is really dumb.
And for kids.
But it had its moments, but there was never that feeling throughout. It was always bookended by a very serious tone.
Which was great and was probably needed.
Yeah, definitely needed. But yeah, I also am kind of curious where this ranks in terms of like people's favorite Gundam series, because I've often heard pretty good things about it.
Yeah, it ranks decently high. I'm not sure if it's the highest, particularly when the Gundam OVAs get involved, because other OVAs around the same time are usually better regarded.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Now I think we have stuff on our watch list.
I think we do as well.
There we go. I'm so pumped. Woo-hoo. Slowly devolving into a Gundam podcast. I love it.
Slowly but surely.
Oh, my God.
All right, y'all. Well, that's our thoughts for today.
And we'll talk to you about other thoughts real soon.
Happy Mecha March. Bye-bye. It's bad. That's right, everybody. The fun is over today. Thanks so much for clicking on the episode. But the fun does not have to stop here. You can hit us up anywhere that you can find us on Instagram or TikTok at Bad Anime Pod, or you can even email us to get in touch with us directly at badanimepod@gmail.com. If you got any opinions or you just want to send some hate mail or love mail, we'll take both. We don't care. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and have a great day.
Simple Equations Podcast Network.